All right, welcome back everyone to the Language and Behavior Podcast. If you are looking on the screen on YouTube and realizing that Charlie Peck looks very different right now, it's because she is actually on a cruise with her family in the Caribbean. And I know my guest, Mitch Weathers, and I are extremely jealous because I think there would be no better than the sun in the Caribbean.
That's true. Well, especially for you in Colorado. How cold is it there?
Dude, it was wicked cold this morning. I'm not going to lie. So there's snow on the mountains and I'm waiting for snow here. Anyways, for those who don't know, I have my great friend, Mitch Weathers, who's filling in today as our monthly guest, but also Charlie, as she's on vacation, wasn't able to join this week. Although Mitch, she said she was extremely bummed not to see you and be able to talk with you this week. But maybe that just gives us an opportunity to bring you back on the show later. Because I know a lot of folks are going to have a ton of questions for you. I know the topic at hand, which is executive functioning. I'm going to throw up your book right now. One of my favorites, which I have right next to me at all times. I just grab it whenever I need it. Reference this book often and share it with other people. It's called Executive Functioning for Every Classroom, Creating Safe and Predictable Learning Environments. And that's what we're going to be talking about today, Mitch. But before we do that, I'd love for you to share just a little bit about yourself, maybe some of your educational background, and why on earth did you write this glorious book?
Yeah. Thanks for the intro. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah.
Charlie, we miss you. So I hope to come back. That would be fun to chat with both of you. So a little bit about me. I'm historically a high school, ninth grade high school science teacher for the most part. I'm based in Northern California. I taught in the Bay Area, and most of my students were multi-language learners. I spent about 18 years in the classroom, spent some time after that in a pre-COVID, non-seat-based virtual async charter school setup, which was really interesting. It was an independent study program. So it was kind of like distance learning before we knew what distance learning was, which was really interesting because a lot of the strategies that I designed in the classroom, I implemented in that space. But really what the reason for that book, that's book number one. Book number two, one part you left out there, that book's tailored or focused on grades 3 through 12. If you hold that's it true. Up again, you'll see that little banner, which he knows because he actually wrote an endorsement for that book. Grades K through three, I'm really proud of, coming out in March of 26. So I designed a program that gives students practice with and supports the development of executive functioning skills called Organized Binder. And it's a whole program. And I have me and my team of trainers, and there's materials. There's this what we call the student bundle. It's this whole program that schools or districts or counties adopt. And we do that work. But the reason I wrote book number one was over the years, I wish I would have kept count of how many teachers or individual parents, individual educators that reached out and said, hey, I want to bring this to my classroom. And we just don't contract with individual teachers in particular because of the materials costs. And I thought, well, how could I unpack the strategies inherent to Organized Binder for teachers? And my promise was kind of like, because the materials piece actually is important. And it's critical for the success of the program and students developing these skills and habits. But I wanted to unpack the strategies and say, hey, if you don't have our training and support and you don't have our materials, you can get started on these strategies. You can start to support the development of executive functions in your students. And so that was the impetus for the book. And it's been a wild ride. It came out in the early part of 2024, and has been really, really well received, which is a indication is that educators and parents are hungry to support the development of executive functions in their kids.
Yeah. So Mitch, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on, because I think what this book has, what you speak on too, I know you're speaking at conferences and school districts, really relates to our book. And me and you have had personal conversations on that. But then also we got a chance at the Vibe EDU Unconference, our event in Anaheim, California. We got to do a panel together. And man, I felt like we were just playing volleyball. I was just setting you up. You're setting me up. It was pretty so awesome. Fun. Yeah. Not only to see you in person and to speak with you, but then also just to see how interrelated the two topics are. And we get so many questions from educators all over the country, Charlie and I, about student behavior. And I'd love for you just to share a little bit about executive functioning and how that does intertwine with some of the behaviors that we're seeing in the classrooms, especially right now. I mean, the honeymoon period is over. We're getting into some stressful times for our young kids with
November
season. Yeah, it's getting for real, right? So will you just share a little bit about your thoughts as to the relationship between student behavior and executive functioning skills?
Absolutely. And I'll just add for the listeners, the panel that Josh and I were on together, it was just the two of us, but it was totally unscripted. So we kind of went into it not knowing what we would be asked from the audience. And there was a moderator who would just field questions. And it really was interesting. I mean, we knew, and we've talked about it, like you said, personal conversations about the overlap of these two books or this work. But, you know, when we look at, and I've, in the same way you always hold up my book, I do the same with Language of Behavior and trying to, and it's so difficult. And you guys have clearly outlined strategies that every teacher can benefit from, every parent actually. And if I had to kind of like distill it down, I've read your book twice, lots of airplane rides since it came out. I think I read it digitally first to endorse it and then read the hard copy and probably will read it again. But it was like, what I kept coming back to was like, if we can just lead with curiosity, then and it's so hard to do. Teaching is so hard and it's so taxing. And there are these ebbs and flows through times of the school year. But if you can disassociate yourself and your own dysregulation and lead with curiosity and say, okay, this behavior that is driving me crazy right now, that's disrupting the learning environment, that might potentially be dangerous, whatever that it might be. If I could keep in mind that this is a form of communication, and I might have something to do with why this is happening. There's no question that sometimes, in particular, I think in less predictable learning environments, that the behaviors that teachers are managing might be the direct result of what they're doing and not so much what the students are doing. Not always, but oftentimes it's trauma and experience and chaos outside of school that students are navigating. So the thing with my work around executive functioning is that these skills aren't taught. I don't teach a curriculum on executive functioning. I call them the three keys, that they're best learned when students clearly see them modeled and they get practice doing them as a byproduct of a predictable learning routine. And that routine, I bring that up because I believe, and you read the subtitle of my book, Josh, but it's Creating Safe and Predictable Learning Environments. And I just fundamentally know that the more predictable the space, the safer it feels. And that has a profound impact on all learners, but in particular, those students whose lives outside of school are anything but predictable. So when we look at behaviors in the classroom, I want people to lead with curiosity, but recognize that it's a form of executive dysfunction often. It's a dysregulation. So things like, if I just can't and don't know how to get and stay organized, there's a dysregulation that comes from that. And on the positive side, when you look at when students learn to get and stay organized, there's something very grounding about that. There's something where I'm in my skin in a way that is different than if I'm not. Learning how to manage my time. How do I keep account? Time and task management, where I can start to see goal-oriented behavior that's aligned to something I'm trying to accomplish. The overlap, I mean, you and I could riff on this for hours and hours and hours, because it's not even an overlap. It's kind of like it's one and the same, the work.
Yeah, right? It's the same plate.
It is. Like, because like say, okay, here's a behavior, punish that behavior. Now we'll move on. You're not solving anything for the learning environment, for the teacher, and most certainly for the young person. And so when we look at underdeveloped executive functioning, or let's flip that, you can start to see how behaviors change when students start to develop their executive functioning. And in overlaying all of this is working memory and cognitive load. And so I fundamentally believe, and I know for a fact, with executive functioning, working memory has a big part. The more working memory capacity that I have available, the more likely I am to demonstrate self-regulated behaviors, getting and staying organized. Like we could go on and on about that. And so I think that the real interesting thing for a teacher, if we're talking to teachers or school leaders, is saying, okay, let's get really crystal clear on my sphere of influence and what I can do to influence behaviors in a positive way. And part of that work, or a big part of that work, is looking at and trying to reduce extraneous load to free up working memory capacity. So if a student comes in a low level or a heightened level fight or flight, they're already dysregulated. And so if I'm maxed out and I can't figure out how to do this assignment, or I'm continually unsuccessful on assessments, then you can start to see how behaviors come about from that experience.
Okay. Just because it's fresh in my mind, Mitch, I want to go a little bit further with that working memory piece. And there was a message on Voxer from a teacher that actually you had access to too. And they were talking about a student that had ADHD. And I see this with my own child at home, one of my many children running around my house. But yeah, working memory.
I didn't hear any of them so far today.
They're at school right now.
Okay.
That's why you may hear my dog.
Usually I'm always listening to see.
I know. Yeah. I was thinking, you know, with that message from the teacher talking about ADHD, I had a guest on Aspire to Lead talking about the same thing with working memory and his own journey as a student. And hearing you again, it just kind of made me think about all of this. And we don't have to speak to that diagnosis specifically, but I do think it helps those students that do have ADHD, which is a hard environment. School is not built for those types of students that have their brain working in that way. And so will you just kind of talk about working memory and how, because I've heard you speak on this many, many times about like how you associate it to calories, to the body. And I love that metaphor, and I'd love for you to expand on that, but then also just how teachers can see that with their students and maybe counteract that so that it's right. It's easier environment for their kids who may be struggling even with attention deficits.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about that. And it's worth noting that for students, and we can just stick with ADHD, that, you know, for students in an environment where a teacher struggles with executive dysfunction, it just exacerbates the issue for students. So for the teachers listening in, it's worth kind of self-analyzing. And most just know, like in fact, right before this call, I was working with a education specialist. She's in a support role at a private school. And she's like, I have ADHD and I have 35 kids and they all have a diagnosis and they're using Organized Binder and it's grounding them. There's a routine, there's things happening. It's all good stuff. But she's just acknowledging like, oh gosh, I'm a part of this too. Like my lack of organization, my dysregulation, but working memory. Yeah. Let's touch on that. Cause it's, you know, working memory and cognitive load theory. Some have said that, you know, Sweller's cognitive load theory might be the most important thing a classroom teacher could learn about, and then start to reflect on that their own practice and their own environment for that. But we have, you know, short-term memory, temporary holding spot. We have our long-term memory, which is, you know, the ultimate goal and destination of all the things we're teaching and learning, and it's finite. Short-term memory is not finite. And if you don't use that information, it's gone. It's out of my short-term memory. But working memory is an active place in the brain. It's an active place, kind of like in book one, I talk about kind of the engine for learning in some ways. And the more times that we interact or engage a student's working memory in that process with the things they're learning, the more likely we are to move it to their long-term memory. But the tricky thing about working memory is it's finite. And you can read, you know, there's a little bit of debate in the cognitive science world on this, but is it 8? Is it 6? Is the most current research I've read is that we can hold about 4 things in memory at one time in our working memory, which is, by the way, why multitasking doesn't work, right? So if working memory is finite and anything that's going to infringe or tax that, I simply have less available. And so the analogy around calories is that I have a certain number of calories. And we could take any way of talking about this, but if I'm going to try to run a mile and I try to run a mile with a 50-pound backpack on, that's just going to take more calories, right? I'm carrying all this weight. So I just have less available. And when we look at it in the classroom through the behavior lens in particular, Josh, is that, you know, for my students in the classroom, I'll stick to my experience working with multi-language learners. And then I recognized early on in my career, like, oh my gosh, I'm relying at times almost entirely, but far too much on verbal communication alone. And there's an equity issue there if it's a heterogeneous classroom, because the students for whom English is not their primary language, of course, they're translating everything they're hearing, everything they're seeing. And if they're sitting next to a student for whom English is their primary language, they're not using any of their working memory. But if I'm having to translate what I'm reading and what I'm hearing, that's a cognitive load. And in that sense, that's kind of what we would refer to as extraneous load. Like, I don't need that. Can I reduce the extraneous load so I free up some working memory capacity? That's all where organized binder came from. So you could think about that through any lens. If I'm in a new learning environment and there's ambiguity, like what's the expectation? How am I supposed to do this? If I'm using that capacity for anything other than learning, then that cognitive load, there's just less available. So if we start to analyze working memory capacity through a behavior lens, if the cognitive load is overloading the working memory, it is not likely for me to stay on task. It's not likely for me to self-regulate, or I should say maybe it's far less likely for me. And so that's the really interesting work, and the intentionality behind that I actually think is really fun as an educator sitting with other teachers and saying, okay, let's look at your environment. Because when we talk about executive functioning, Paul Tough says it best in How Children Succeed. Believe it or not, I have it sitting right here. So I quoted it in book two. He says that if we can shape the environment in ways that lead to better executive functioning, well, that's really honestly at times through a cognitive load lens. How do I make it so predictable that I just know what to do to engage? And so I'm freeing up that working memory capacity. So that's where I think we start to get into a really interesting conversation about how working memory and cognitive load translate into classroom management concerns. And when you start to free up, when you reduce the extraneous load, you free up working memory, and you actually will see a reduction in student behaviors.
Does that help? All right, buddy. Oh, dude, I love it. I can talk to you about this for the whole day. Yeah. And sometimes we get really into hours and hours of conversation. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I'm gonna pause this because I want to do a fun little thing that me and Charlie do each week, which I've never done with a guest. At least I don't think so. And if I did it with Kim Gamrose, I know she'll probably listen to this and kill me later saying, no, I was the first to do it, not Mitch. But I think you're the first one to do it, Mitch.
It's me. If you are listening, I'm first.
Well, what's funny is she just voxed us, so she knows that we're together. But yeah. I'm going to do behind the banter real quick, and then we'll close this down. Yeah, I didn't mean to cut you off, Mitch, but this is a little segment
I was going to say, what's behind the banter? What are you getting me into here?
It's just something personal, man. And we do fun questions just to kind of lighten it up and let people know about the folks that are behind the microphone. And this is one thing I don't know about you. So I'm going to ask you, what was your first job, Mitch, ever? And what did it teach you?
Wow. First, like, regular job?
Yeah, real job. You had to apply. You had to go into an interview.
Yeah, REI.
I'm guessing you were probably like, oh, of course.
16 years old.
I should have just guessed that.
Yeah. And I had to go. I really wanted to work there because, you know, at the time I was and still am a pretty avid snowboarder and rock climber and mountain bike, all the stuff that I like to do. And I was like, well, no other place to work. So I went in and applied. I worked there for, I think I've probably told you, that's why it took me 7 years to get through my undergrad. Because I was doing other things instead of going to school.
You had to use all the products you were selling.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I had to be an expert.
You were very committed.
You learn by doing, my friend. Yeah.
Well, right. Let's see. My first job was McDonald's.
Really?
I know. Yeah.
I've never worked in food, so I have no experience.
I was trying to work to get a car. I had to pay for my car. So it was walking distance. It was a block from my house, so I could walk there. I saved enough money and eventually got wheels.
Okay. So what was the car? What was the first car?
An Acura Integra.
Like
89, though.
McDonald's paid well back then.
It didn't. If you saw this car, you would take that comment back quickly. But it has a spoiler on it. It was rocking the old school lights that lifted up from from the hood.
Probably worth some money now.
Oh, man. I dropped the tranny on that one, but that's another story.
Nice.
Anyways, I think the big thing I learned from that job was customer service and just the value of that. And to work with some folks who had complaints about really what should have been a minor situation that turned into major situations. Oh, but it was a good life lesson.
Like being
still
a teacher or
yeah, I was going to say, or administrator.
Yeah.
It was just
yeah,
I don't think I learned for later down the road.
We learned a little bit. You'd have sometimes a crazy, you had a lot of crazy people at REI, but more like crazy, like just came out
passionate
of the woods, crazy, super passionate. Yeah. Yeah. All the people that worked there back then, like you have the climbing department, and like the people were like legit big wall climbers in Yosemite. I'm in Northern California, and sure, they've all gone on to do like careers and stuff. And the cycling department, these guys were like pro cyclists. So there was a lot of very passionate people, is probably the best way to say it. So
that's awesome.
My first car, by the way, was a 75 Volkswagen bus.
Oh,
and I blew the engine just like you dropped the tranny.
All these things are just matching up with all the things I know about Mitch. So this is not a surprise. Yeah. But this REI and the bus, that's
yeah,
it's totally your
job. Talk about wishing you held onto a car. Wow. Yeah, anyway, go ahead. I digress.
No, I was going to throw up your website once again, organizedbinder.com. Mitch has a ton of stuff that he supports educators with. We didn't talk about Organized Binder as a program, but okay, you know, if folks are interested in learning more, head over to Mitch's website. He's got a ton of information there. What's up?
Look for the free class. About every 2 months, I offer a completely free class on executive function. So if this is resonating with you, forget where it is on the homepage, but there'll be a little link to join the next free class, which if anybody hears this, I think it's in 2 or 3 weeks is the next class.
Okay. Shoot me the link, Mitch, and I'll put it in the show notes for everyone because I want folks to be able to grab
organizedbinder.com/EF.
Oh, okay. That's easy. Yep. Well, that'll be in the show notes for everyone too.
Yeah, keep things really easy.
Very simple. All right. And then of course, my website, joshhammer.com, and I will throw Charlie's up too. She's at thrivingeducator.org. If there's anything that we can support you in, make sure you do so. I will make sure Mitch's book is in the show notes for folks. I want you to grab that as soon as possible. Executive Functioning for Every Classroom. It is amazing. And then with that, we're going to shut this down as both Mitch and I are about to go see our Vibe EDU crew. If you are looking for an additional podcast to check out, former guests, Kim Gamrose, now Mitch Weathers, myself and TJ Berry, all come together each week to talk about a whole bunch of topics on education. So I wanted to highlight that because I do have the honor and pleasure of being with Mitch on that podcast on a regular basis. So make sure you check that out, and I'll throw that in the show notes for everyone else. With that, I hope everyone has a fantastic week, and we look forward to seeing you again next week as we're going to be back to full house with Charlie Peck and myself. But this week, Mitch, thank you so much for filling in.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.